Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Herman Pretorius. Let's get into our first news story of today. And this is what, to me, quite frankly, is the surprising good news coming out of Eskom. So there was a piece in, I think it was News 24 today, News 24, that Eskom says that it may be looking at the final end of load shedding. And that it's very happy as its recovery plan takes off. So Eskom recently launched their summer maintenance plan, which they were explaining to the media. Eskom claims it has achieved a, quote, structural shift in the performance of its various electricity plants. In less than a year, Eskom has raised the energy availability factor, which is basically what percentage of the electricity system is working at any one time, from its lowest point at about 50% was the average in 2023 when we had the really bad load shedding. So in other words, half of all of the electricity potential generation in our plants was offline. Has now gone all the way up to 67% on average in this year to date. So, you know, in August of this year, 2024. The reduction in unplanned outages was 18,000 megawatts at one point. And it's now around 10,000 megawatts. Eskom believes that this will lead to a, quote, comfortable summer. And they believe that when eventually Kuburg 2 and Medupi return to service and the last unit of Kusile, these are the different power plants, come on stream, that they may be able to say by April next year that load shedding is permanently behind us. Now, there's still some problems. Kuburg is, I think, massively delayed in how long it's taken to come online. So has Kusile. Kuburg has been undergoing refitting to extend its life because it's quite an old plant. And Kusile was just a disaster of a project from the beginning, so it's taken much too long. But, Herman, what do you make of this? It's quite spectacular. And I will say that our former boss, Franz Krenier, did, as part of the Social Research Foundation, I believe, either early this year or last year, did highlight the possibility that if you just improved plant performance, you could probably see a significant reduction in load shedding. And it looks like, despite, I think, our suspicions, that Eskom seems to have been able to do that. How do you think this happened?
Yeah, I must say a few things stand out for me on this. Number one is that the report says that according to Eskom, one of the reasons it could, you know, trigger this virtuous cycle, as it called it, was that it regained control over its human resource functions, and to quote from the article, that had been removed from them by then shareholder representative Pravin Gordhan. Now, just to contextualize, this is the man that for a short while, about a decade ago, was considered the moral compass of our country. Because he had sort of slightly taken issue with a massive corruption under Jacob Zuma. I mean, plaudits for doing that, but it was a particularly low bar. This was also the man who then, following his appointment as Minister of Finance in the wake of the financial crash, just blew up South Africa's debt problem, leading us to a point where we are today of paying more than R1 billion a day in just debt servicing costs as a country. So well done, Pravin. And this was also the man who then seemingly made it impossible for Eskom to actually have control over its own functions. I mean, it's so apparatchik thinking that the minister, the party, the state had to have control over the functioning of this SOE, that he actually just made it more difficult for Eskom to solve a problem that seemingly has been within their capacity to solve all along, if this turns out to be true. It sort of reminds me of the insane level of failure between 1990 and 2023. In the early 90s, Eskom warned the government that population growth and the success of housing expansion in the late 90s would exhaust Eskom's capacity by 2007. In 1998, Cabinet accepted a white paper to resolve the issue, yet failed to implement it. Then in 2001, Cabinet banned Eskom from investing in new generation capacity, quote, in the domestic market. Then in 2004, Cabinet reversed its 2001 ban and approved the construction of Medupi and Kusile. But the problem was that by the time Medupi and Kusile were approved, BEE and CADA deployment have and anti-merit policies have so depleted Eskom's internal talent that it didn't have the capacity to design and build Medupi and Kusile. So it got in Hitachi Limited, a Japanese conglomerate who had no experience working with South African coal, whose designs contained enormous errors that then took to 2015, a quarter of a century after the government was first warned about load shedding, the first unit of Medupi becomes operational. In 2017, the first unit at Kusile becomes operational. In 2021, 31 years after load shedding was first flagged as a crisis, Medupi becomes fully operational. And as we are sitting here today, Kusile still isn't fully operational. So at every step of the damn way, the solutions were within reach, but made impossible by an ANC government. I mean, it just boggles.
There's two other things to consider here. Firstly, the fact that we've had such poor economic growth for a while now, I think has definitely made it easier for Eskom, because, of course, when the economy doesn't grow, demand for electricity doesn't grow. So that's probably also helped them. We've also seen a large number of people and businesses go off grid, particularly wealthier suburbanites and some businesses which have been able to. There's been a little bit of the loosening of the restrictions around generating your own electricity. So some of the big mines and factories and things have managed to set up their own generating stuff. There's also been advancements in technology that have improved energy saving over the last sort of 20 years or so. So, you know, it's not all Eskom's success here. The fact that they've still only got 2/3 of the system up and running on average any one time is not great. But, you know, when you take it with these other factors, that does seem to be pushing them in the right direction. But I would also venture, and Herman, tell me if I'm being silly here, but this is in many ways a product of actually democracy working. If the ANC had not been able to stabilize Eskom, they would have gotten probably 35% of the vote in the last election, if I was to guess. They would have done even worse than they already did. And it was only the last-minute scramble and the fact that, you know, they took the boot off of Eskom's neck for 5 minutes that seems to have created this this change. And, you know, democracy may not be perfect, but this does seem to be a victory for it. A fear of losing power does amazing things to a government.
And what adds to this frustration is the it adds frustration, but also to the, you know, positiveness here is the fact that load shedding has always been politically costly for the ANC, but it had been sort of manageable because the resources were such that they could just sort of shamelessly bribe large parts of the country with free electricity by forcing Eskom not to call in accounts that were due them. And the second thing here is that you're absolutely...
Also, to be clear, I think that 2023 was a bit of a breaking point because load shedding was so bad.
In that 335 days of load shedding in 2023. It really was quite enormous. I mean, to celebrate the 100 years, the centenary of Eskom, we had, you know, 335 days of load shedding. The other question here, just on whether it would have been democratically damaging, that's exactly what research by the Social Research Foundation found, that I can't remember if it's 1 in 4 or 1 in 10 voters, but the point is that a significant chunk of ANC voters were up for grabs due to load shedding. But then the last point, just to, you know, the positive sting in the tail here as well, is internal merit-based competition works, because Eskom now says that they have an incentive structure that allows month-by-month operational incentives. And I mean, just, you know, welcome to the free market, guys, where the idea of if you don't perform, you don't get paid. If you don't give what is needed, you don't get what is earned. I mean, that sounds vaguely familiar. It might have been something that the IR has been saying for 100 years.
Indeed. Look, we're still not out of the woods yet, and I think that we could very easily see ourselves go backwards, particularly if there's another disaster like there was at I think it was either Madupi or Kusile. One of the chimneys blew up, and since then, you know, that was one of the big contributors to the massive load shedding in 2023. So if something like that happens again, we may find ourselves back in the same position. But I do, in fact, hope that there has been, as Eskom says, the structural shift, and that we can now go back to focusing on economic growth.
And that's economic growth is also the other thing to watch here, is,
right,
as you said earlier, a stagnant economy has depressed demand for electricity. If the GNU changes market sentiment and, you know, loosens some of the limits on the economic potential of the country, then ironically, Eskom's greatest risk might be a growing economy. What a perverse situation.
Exactly. So there can be no rest on the electricity front anytime soon, I think, is the clear bottom line here. Okay, I think we've only got time for one more story, so let's just quickly talk about this. The Auditor General has released her consolidated general report for 2022 to 2023 financial year, and she says that there has not been a lot of improvement in the state of municipalities, saying there has been, quote, no meaningful improvement over the last 2 years of the current term. The Auditor General looks into basically whether municipalities are doing their accounting correctly, and only 34 of SA's municipalities achieved clean audits. In other words, they did all of the paperwork as they were supposed to for their financials. Now, this has not been... there has been some movement in municipalities. Some municipalities, I think it was 45, have improved their audit outcomes, but 36 of them have regressed, and this is since 2020. So, you know, two steps forward, one and a half steps back, I guess. On the other hand, there were slightly fewer municipalities with the worst audit outcome, which is a disclaimed audit opinion. And there are a couple of municipalities, 18 actually, mostly in KZN, Mpumalanga, Northwest, who had this really low ranking of audit, but then moved out of it. So this in of itself suggests that municipal government continues very much to be in the huge crisis that it's in. And even if the GNU is successful, which is by no means anything near a done deal yet, local government shows no signs of improving right now. Sort of realistically, Herman, what do you think is the way forward here?
Well, the sort of hidden benefit of the 2024 elections, the biggest one, I think, is not the outcome and the GNU. And it is the fact that for a century, politics was simply an unattractive channel for anyone who sought to put public service ahead of personal gain. And I'm of course generalizing grossly here, but research seems to indicate that in single party dominant systems, the quality of politicians decline over time because dominant parties have no incentive to renew their talent, and opposition parties struggle to attract talent because it's difficult to get someone to leave a comfortable retirement or a successful career to join the opposition benches for a term. And not really affect change. So the fact that we have now opened a door that has really never been opened in South African history, that there isn't one party dominance, there isn't an accepted, governing party or ruling party, as perverse as the term is, might just attract enough talent to start flowing back into politics that will allow local government politics to step up its game. Because all the political system and all the parties participating in it has a perverse incentive structure, where it is get to parliament, because that's where the decent remuneration is. And you know, if you're interested in politics and you're a high flyer, you get to parliament. If you're a high flyer with perhaps some limitations, you get to provincial level. And if you're interested in politics, but you don't really cut it at the big leagues level, you go to local government. Now, I'm not saying that that is the case, but that is too much of the attitude, that local politics is a stepping stone or a landing ground for people who didn't quite make it. And that isn't to say that they are brilliant councillors. They are. They really are. But parties have been funneling their top class talent away from local government for too long. And that must change, because that's the only way forward to fix this.
And
In the case of the ANC, they also staff the national bureaucracy with their high flying talent as well. So even within the ANC's universe, there's been a kind of brain drain towards the center, just in the same way as there has been with the politicians from the bureaucracy. All right. Thank you very much, Herman. And we hope you enjoyed the show. We will, of course, be back tomorrow on the Daily Fringe Show. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a good one. Cheers, everyone.
The Daily Friend Show and The Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.